You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Several of our best programs have, in recent months, been devoted to labor and employment law. Tonight is no exception. Tonight, in conjunction with the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association, our discussions will be looking at the workplace. 3 years after the passage of Proposition 64, we have marijuana legalization. But what does all this mean in the workplace? After you attend a marijuana-related conference and place some photos on your Facebook page, a coworker turns you into management. Are you safe? You've run your company for years. You have contracts with the federal government, or perhaps do business in a pot-unfriendly state. Or maybe your job has safety issues and you want to test your employees. What can you do? What do you do? You use medicinal CBD oil and suddenly test positive for trace amounts of THC, even though you never use marijuana. What are your rights? What are your rights in California? What are your rights in other states? My guests tonight, as I said, appear courtesy of the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association. Jonathan Judge is a partner in the Cerritos, California firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rudd, and Romo. Mr. Judge advises employers in various labor and employment law matters, including drug testing, immigration compliance, trade secrets, privacy, technology in the workplace, municipal and state sick leave, local, state, and federal minimum wage law, and the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Danielle Lucido is the Chief Counsel of Engineers and Scientists of California, IFPTE. I'm going to make you tell us what that means. IFPTE number local 20 in Oakland, California. IFPTE is a dynamic, democratic, and activist union that represents more than 6,000 licensed engineers, scientists, licensed healthcare professionals, and attorneys at PG&E, Kaiser Permanente, the EPA, Legal Aid at Work, and other employers throughout Northern California. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134 in the studio. Or if you're outside of San Francisco, you can call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Occasionally, I neglect to mention that while we're happy to answer all of your questions, we stop short of giving precise legal advice as we don't have all the facts relating to a given case. But we're more than happy to pass along the legal principles that can help guide your decision-making. As always, you can call regarding any question in the topic of employment law or, for that matter, marijuana law. But tonight, we really emphasize where those two intersect, the laws of marijuana as it relates to the workplace. You're not limited to where we may be in our conversation. And again, our number here is 866-798-8255. And Danielle, Jonathan, let me welcome both of you back to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
You know, before we go too far, I'd like to start here. One of the early hypos I threw out, you've attended a marijuana-related conference and placed some photos on your Facebook page. And you think it's all funny until a coworker turns you into management. Are you safe?
Well, I'll take the first swing at this one, Jeff. And I would have a tough time telling an employer that they could take action against the employee just based on that information coming up. There's two things that are at play here. Number one would be some labor code protections for lawful off-duty activity. And nothing is being described right now with regard to the hypothetical where someone's engaged in something unlawful during their off-duty hours. The other thing that comes into play there would be, you know, an employer might try to say, well, based on that information I'm receiving, does that give me enough information to be able to drug test that individual due to reasonable suspicion. And that may not be enough to establish reasonable suspicion, again, given the limited amount of information that we're getting from that Facebook posting.
Let me tweak that just a little bit. And Danielle, I'll throw this one to you. Let's say at the time that photo surfaces, you were up for promotion. You're being considered to step up into management or maybe just a better position among the other workers there, and that photo surfaces. How safe are you there? Can you be denied that promotion?
That's a good question. I think Jonathan's analysis still applies because denying the promotion might still be considered an adverse employment action based on lawful off-duty activity. Jonathan, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think I agree with that. It's going to maybe depend on, again, what was depicted in the posting. And perhaps there would be something there that an employer would be able to say, you know, management type of folks have a higher standard to live up to. But again, they'd have to be careful with that.
But on the other hand, you're up for promotion. You're looking to be elevated amongst your peers. There may be several people in the same position that are looking for a promotion. And an employer thinks maybe that you're the lead for that job and that photo surfaces. Couldn't they decide, well, maybe we should go to this guy over here because, you know, she's demonstrated some questionable judgment by putting this out there in the public?
I think that is... a complicated question, and I would, I don't advise employers on what to do, but I would think that if I were advising employers, I would advise that they tread lightly with that, because if there can be any proof that you did it based on their attendance at that conference, it circles back to protection for legal off-duty activity. Now, if we want to throw a curveball in and say that one of the photos shows the individual with a joint in their hand or potentially smoking, then I think that mixes things up.
Yeah, I agree with that, Daniel.
So in the end, it's context is everything.
Definitely. And you know, an off analysis of off-duty conduct is going to be different than when we're talking about potential on-duty conduct and what employers can do relating to behavior in the workplace.
Let me shift gears and come at this from another angle. You've run your company for years. Maybe you have contracts with the federal government, or you do business in other states. Maybe not all of them are friendly to marijuana. Or maybe you have safety issues on your job that are somewhat unique, and you want to test your employees. You know, what can you do in that regard? Are there limits, or when can you test them?
I'll take that one, Jeff, and, you know, start off with, you know, one suggestion would be with the different drug laws, you're almost dealing with a patchwork of 50 states and 50 different rules. As Danielle can tell you, there's a number of states that have passed differing protections for marijuana users. And then you have to deal with the different standards that they use for allowing for testing. But as far as California goes, one of the things that I wanted to lay the groundwork for the audience was what can employers in California test for and under what circumstances. And the two areas where it's clear that employers can test is on a pre-employment basis, and that's for alcohol and drugs. And then once someone is hired, they can test based upon reasonable suspicion. There's a reasonable suspicion that they're impaired either by drugs or alcohol at work. Outside of those areas in California, the privacy laws under the California Constitution offer some protections against testing that may be more frequently done in other states, such as random testing or post-accident testing are the two most frequent ones that we see. And there are, of course, exceptions for that. If you're dealing with employees that are covered by the federal Department of Transportation rules, they, in that type of situation, then the state California rules are preempted by the federal, and the federal law takes precedence in that situation.
I remember it used to be fairly commonplace that you would see logos or advertisements from some of the employers, some of the larger ones especially, that would be happy to boast that they have a drug-free workplace. Would this preempt that idea of the drug-free workplace?
Well, there's the Federal Drug-Free Workplace Act, and that has been tested in a number of other states where they have protections for medical marijuana users. And in a few cases before the courts, they've said that there's no preemption on that basis because the Federal Drug-Free Workplace Act does not require employers to test employees, but merely to enforce a drug-free workplace. So that's been a tough argument that some employers have faced in some other states other than California.
Yeah, that defense has not stood up. In the four states where marijuana legislation that protects workers from discrimination has been tested, the employer has lost in all four of those states. And that was Arizona, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Delaware. And the courts have found that the Federal Drug-Free Workplace Act does not preempt state protective legislation that protects workers from being discriminated against for using medical marijuana. And they've also found that the Federal Controlled Substances Act, which schedules marijuana as a Schedule I drug, does not preempt state protective legislation because it too does not speak to drug testing in the workplace or employment.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, and in conjunction with the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association, we're looking at the workplace 3 years after the passage of Proposition 64, Marijuana and the Workplace. My guests tonight, Danielle Lucido is the Chief Counsel, Engineers and Scientists of California, IFPTE Local 20 in Oakland, California, an AFL-CIO affiliated union that is democratic, dynamic, an activist, and represents more than 6,000 licensed engineers, scientists, and licensed healthcare professionals. Jonathan Judge is a partner at the Cerritos, California firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rood, and Romo. Mr. Judge advises employers in various labor and employment law matters, including drug testing. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free. We will pick up the freight. The number there is 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on the topic. Tonight, we're discussing employment law, or for that matter, marijuana law. We're really looking at the area where these things intersect. You're not limited to where we may be in the conversation. Just call us with your questions at 866-798-8255.
Could we circle back quickly to the first hypothetical? I just wanted to point out that for union employees, me being a union lawyer, the analysis would be different relating to off-duty conduct. So the individual who was attending the conference, when you have a collective bargaining agreement, most collective bargaining agreements include a provision that gives the employee the right to only be terminated for just cause. And typically that means that what you do off duty cannot be used as a justification for your termination unless the employer can make some nexus to your job.
Which pretty much goes with the old adage that you can contract for much better protections than the law itself affords you. I see we have the first call coming through. As it's working its way through to us, let me ask you a related question to where we've been talking about. You're not a pot smoker. You don't use marijuana in any of its forms. But you do use medicinal CBD oil. And shortly thereafter, you test positive for trace amounts of THC. What are your rights? Let's start with California.
I can try and answer this. So CBD, when it is derived from hemp, is now legal in the United States and is no longer a Schedule I drug. However, hemp has 0.3% THC or less in it, which means that CBD derived from a hemp plant may have traces of THC in it. And in fact, we're finding out that a lot of CBD that's being sold at Walgreens and at your local vet and grocery store, it proclaims to be CBD, but it actually contains THC. And part of that has to do with how difficult it is to extract THC from CBD that comes from a hemp plant or a marijuana plant. So unfortunately, in California, if you test positive after using CBD that proclaims to be just CBD and it actually contained some amount of THC, there is no protection for you currently in California in state law. And there's case law in California that we can get into if you want to, but has found that medical marijuana users are not protected. So that case came down in 2008, Ross versus Raging Wire Telecommunications. So in my opinion, that case would apply. An employer could take action if they were testing you lawfully and it was either reasonable suspicion or pre-employment and it was just CBD that you took. If you tested positive for THC, I think you'd have some issues. You'd be in trouble.
Even though CBD is often, not only is it not necessarily psychoactive, a lot of times it's in various forms of things you apply externally rather than ingesting it.
That's true.
Directly.
That's true. And the FDA has not yet gotten a hold of how to regulate the sale of it, either for its application externally or edibly. They don't have a program yet for figuring out how to test the products. And they're meeting and discussing it, but it's sort of the Wild West out there right now.
Jonathan, do you see it any differently?
No, I don't. I agree with Danielle on that point. And it stems from, you know, California passing Proposition 64, but not yet coming up with any standard for impairment that would allow, you know, different levels of the drug to be somewhat acceptable if you're below a certain threshold or, you know, violating the law if you're above that threshold. The California hasn't come up with that and instead is saying that any amount is unacceptable, and it becomes difficult for the person who's failed the drug test in that instance to disprove that they were not taking marijuana versus one of these other substances.
I will say, though, that again, if you're in a union workplace, then you have just cause and the analysis would be different. And in addition, in the 15 states that have state protective legislation, the outcome would be different.
Talk about that a little bit. Tell me about some of the other states.
So there are currently 15 states that have enacted legislation and specifically to protect marijuana users. And it varies based on the state, but most of them have in common that they protect medical marijuana users from being terminated for identifying as a user. And most of them also protect a worker who tests positive for metabolites alone, so such that a positive test alone would not be sufficient. So if you did CBD in one of these 15 states and you happen to catch a trace amount of THC and then test positive on a pre-employment test, that would not be enough for an employer to choose not to hire you. Some of the states are, I'll just list a few. The most recent one to pass such legislation was New Jersey, but legislation exists in Arizona, Arkansas, Connecticut. Unfortunately, California, Washington, and Oregon have not caught up and do not yet have protective legislation. And I will note one more thing about this is that Nevada has special legislation that requires accommodation.
So California being the first state to legalize medicinal use of marijuana, and yet we haven't done anything to protect the workers who may use it medicinally.
Correct.
That is correct, yeah.
Jonathan, do you want to talk a little bit about the legislation?
Yeah. So there was a bill last year, AB 2069, which was proposed, which would have protected medical marijuana users under the Fair Employment and Housing Act here in California. And that did not make it out of the legislature last year. Danielle, you were saying that there's a bill on the agenda for 2020?
Yeah, I understand that the same parties that were that put forward the legislation that you just described are coming at it again for 2020 and hope to not only protect medical marijuana users, but also pass some kind of legislation like Nevada and New York City, to prevent pre-employment drug testing for marijuana. So that would also protect, to a certain degree, recreational users.
Is this true of states that don't even have legalized marijuana, that they somehow have a different treatment for someone to use it outside of work?
No. So all of this legislation is in states that have made marijuana legal to one extent or another, so either recreationally or both recreationally and medically. And most of the protection in these 15 states has to do with medical marijuana users, but some of the legislation also has protection for recreational users.
You know, in that regard, I remember discussions as far back as I was in law school and back, you know, in the days when a tablet didn't talk about a small computer. It was really a stone that you chipped in. But we were talking about drug testing in the workplace and whether an employer could really do tests to see what you're doing on your off time versus test to see if you're impaired at the time you're at work. Has that changed any? I mean, it seemed like those days when I was joking about the tablet, but it really does in a lot of ways seem like the Stone Ages. Are we still there?
Pretty much for marijuana. So when we're testing for marijuana, there is no scientific consensus yet on what level of a positive constitutes impairment. So right now, if you're testing positive for metabolites, you are unable to state when the use occurred.
So with that, testing positive for metabolites that may be days or weeks old.
Correct.
Maybe enough to put you in jeopardy, even though maybe you're a weekend party animal, but the fact is you've cleaned it up and you're at work on Monday and somebody says, I want to take a look and see what's inside your system, what's in the fluids in your system, and they still can?
In California, only under the circumstances that Jonathan described. So if there is reasonable suspicion or if it is pre-employment.
The other circumstance where it could come up would be if you had safety-sensitive employees, then you would be able to test on a random basis where that might come up for you have your weekend use and later coming up unexpectedly being subject to one of those standards. But you'd be wise not to get into that field of work if that's your habit. Because you're going to be on notice that the employer's going to be conducting those types of tests. You're just not going to know when, but the law does obligate them to inform the employees ahead of time that random testing is something that could be done.
Does that differ in other states?
Yeah, that's going to differ state by state, depending on what the different statutes in those states say, or what the courts have said in case law.
So this looks like the phones are starting to light up, calls are starting to come in. They'll be coming through in just a moment. I do want you to ponder a shift of direction for when we come back from the break midway through the hour. We've been talking about testing. We've been talking about use. And I'd like to turn a little bit to some related topics other than use. Somebody comes back from lunch. They perhaps pick up some hemp oil at the drugstore. It may not even be for them, but he places it on his or her desk. Or perhaps they're showing off some clothing made with hemp, or wearing a jacket with a pot leaf in the front, an area where he might come into contact with the public. Or where it gets really complicated, or maybe it's simpler. Somebody works at a nationwide employer, whether it's a big box store or somebody else that we're all familiar with, and on their uniform they put a pin that has a pot leaf. Or maybe it's a pot leaf with the name of their union local on it, so that you have some mixed issues there. I'd like to focus on that when we get back. I do see we have, I dare say, Daniela, you've met your match. We have a call from Daniel on the line. Daniel, we're going to be back in just a moment, and I'll turn the call to you. We're at 28 minutes after the hour, a little earlier than I like to do this, but I will turn it over to for a brief station identification. Before I do, again, I'll return the number if anybody wants to call. Our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
I gave you some thoughts to think about for upcoming questions, but I think the first question of the hour goes to Daniel in San Francisco. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hey, thanks for having me on.
Listen.
Happy to have you. Go ahead.
So the question is, when marijuana became legal in San Francisco and, of course, California, why did the companies who have a problem with it, why did that not become a moot point? And also, why don't they give it the same allowance? Because if they tested me for alcohol, for the sake of argument, it was in my system, which I know goes out of your system a lot quicker, maybe make an allowance that people could be drug tested and wait 2 weeks or something. So how can they discriminate against someone who's doing something that's legal, which I would compare with attending outside work event that was legal? How can they still do that?
Well, Daniel, you bring up two issues. The first was the one that I had next up on my list after that story about the hemp oil or the pot leaf or whatever it may be, and that's the discrimination between marijuana and other medicines, whether they be prescription medicines or extracurricular medicines or whatever it may be, over-the-counter. The other has to do with the policy issue. Why can't employers that don't like the policy take their lumps? I think... Let's start with the discrimination between marijuana and other substances, whether they be medicinal or recreational, but nevertheless lawful.
Okay.
I think that the the ability to discriminate comes from the fact that the Federal Controlled Substances Act still treats marijuana, the marijuana plant, as a Schedule I drug.
And does that trump the state law?
Yes. Currently in California, because we do not have state protective legislation, unfortunately, there can be different treatment for use of medical marijuana and other medicines that are not treated as Schedule I.
So it has nothing to do with the company that I'm going to work for has offices, or they might be situated in other states that don't allow marijuana. So that's not figured into the equation?
Not for a California employee.
Okay. All right. Interesting. I just figured that when it became legal in California, that all that you can't have that in your system would be gone, because it's totally legal, and we know it's station your system per person, per maybe wait 2-3-4 days, 2-3 weeks. So it's amazing that that's still going on.
It really is. It's different. You would think that after this much time, whether it be from medicinal marijuana or whether it be now lawful recreational marijuana, you would think at some point somebody would have tried to standardize or quantify exactly what it takes. And whether it's for lack of trying or whether it's been they've been unsuccessful because it varies so much between people, the reality is those standards don't apply.
And have corporations actually actively looked at this? Now, I know, Danielle, you mentioned your union is involved with PG&E. God knows they have enough headaches right now. But have they themselves have looked at that policy and maybe thinking about changing it at all?
You know, I think Jonathan would be the right person to answer this question, since he talks to employers all the time. Jonathan?
Yeah, I think, some employers, they're taking different approaches to it. Some are not testing at all for marijuana and excluding it from their testing panel. But others are still interested, and the reaction that they're taking is that we want to put employees on notice that even though California has passed this law, Proposition 64, it's still prohibited under federal law, and the employer at this workplace is still not going to allow employees to test positive for drug use. So putting the employees on notice that shouldn't come as a surprise to them, that the employer is not going to tolerate that.
Now, is that still just for like ongoing employees that can be subject to random drug tests, or is it just mostly for new employees? And once they become employees, is the random drug test not going on? Is that based on corporation to corporation?
Well, like I was saying earlier, the random testing is pretty limited in California to safety-sensitive positions, your construction employees, your ditch diggers, those types of folks, or you have your Department of Transportation regulated employees that are subject to the federal law. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, you're not going to get a lot of random drug testing. So then it's really going to be a pre-employment basis, where if you test clean, then you're going to, what happens after that may be something that flies under the radar.
And Mr. Lucido, is there any legislation now in Sacramento about this?
My understanding is that the organizations who tried to get legislation passed in the last session and were unsuccessful are coming back at it for 2020, and are hoping to get legislation passed that covers not only medical marijuana users, but also disallows pre-employment testing for everyone, which is, Jonathan informed me when we got on this call earlier, that Nevada just passed that legislation, and they're the first state to do something like that.
Good, good. Okay, well, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Have a good night.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. Our next caller was going to be Susan. I noticed that your call seems to have dropped off. Feel free to call us back. We're happy to answer your questions and take your call. But for now, I'd like to turn it over to Dale in Oakland. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hi. I'm Dale Geringer, actually, with California Normal, which was an organization that sponsored last year's bill to try to give medical marijuana users employment rights, and we definitely do hope to come back with that again and maybe to protect other marijuana users as well. But the comment has been made a couple of times by both your guests that California has not yet managed to come up with some sort of standard for impairment on these drug tests. And
Dale, before you explain, further, yeah. I want to let you finish that sentence. I just want to clarify. As I understood the comments of my guests, they haven't said that there's no test for impairment. What they said is that there's no reliable alcohol or drug type alcohol type testing that would have a level of alcohol that suggests impairment. There's no similar quantification of marijuana testing where you can take a urine sample and know if the person's impaired from that. There's no numbers that correspond to impairment.
That's exactly true, and I was just going to comment that it's now become clear that that's not going to happen because it's an impossible task to actually determine employment impairment levels from testing bodily fluids for marijuana and for practically every other drug, including exclusive of alcohol. Alcohol is the exception, but we have drugs like opioids that are out there and benzodiazepines or tranquilizers, all of them very similar to marijuana. Nobody has been able to or will be able to actually establish a clear standard because the levels that appear in the bodily fluids do not correspond to the levels active in the brain. And unless they could, put a needle in your brain and measure that, you'll never get there. So that's a reason that we favor outright performance testing, where you they observe your reflexes and maybe do a video game or something like that and see whether you can perform it normally or not. That's a technology that can detect impairment, but the chemical tests are never going to work.
If you're working on a forklift, lifting a television 15 feet above the ground at a big box store to store it above where everybody's standing, testing that you've described would arguably be a much better indicator to the employer whether you're a risk to have around or not than something looking at what you may have used in your off time. But that's the argument. Jonathan, how do your clients feel about that? Would they agree with that scenario, as Dale was suggesting, or do some of them feel differently?
That would be, an interesting test to come up with, different physical abilities based on a physical exam rather than just testing for chemicals. So, that'd be something that I think would interest employers. And, one of the things that we've been looking at with this issue is the different approaches that the different states are taking. For the time being, California is taking that zero tolerance approach of any level of drug in the system is considered a positive test. But there are other states that require that, as Danielle was pointing out earlier, you can't make a decision to terminate someone just based on the presence of metabolites in their system. So that would be what Dale is kind of getting at as well, where you're going to have to establish some type of impairment at the same time as the drug test is being given, to kind of hit two different points there to establish a threshold to take action against an employee.
So it really takes morality out of the question and instead focuses on ability.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the standard that we see with alcohol, where if someone's impaired at work, then they can be tested. And if it's above a certain threshold, then they're going to be, you're going to have both the both situations there being met, and action can be taken against them.
Dale, did we answer your questions?
Yes, you did.
I would very much like to talk with you at an additional time. I think that we're scratching the surface, but we are focusing on one area, but we're barely scratching the surface here tonight, and I would love to have a conversation with you about
check out our website at www.canormal.org, N-O-R-M-L, C-A-N-O-R-M-L. We have a lot about drug testing up there and about our upcoming Labor Day campaign to reform California's laws.
But perhaps don't take pictures of yourself on the website and send them around to you on your Facebook page just yet. Dale, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. You're welcome back anytime, and I would love to continue this conversation with you. For everyone else, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. And tonight, in conjunction with the Labor and Employment Section of the California Lawyers Association, we're looking at marijuana 3 years after the passage of Prop 64. What's the status of marijuana and your workplace? My guest tonight, Jonathan Judge, partner at the Cerritos, California firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Red, and Romo. Mr. Judge advises employers in various labor and employment law matters, including but not limited to drug testing. Danielle Lucida is the chief counsel from the Engineers and Scientists of California, IFPTE. I told you, at some point you're going to tell us what this stands for. IFPTE, Local 20 in Oakland, California. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number here in the studio is 415-841-4134, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on the topic. You don't have to jump into where we are in our conversation. Tonight, we're talking employment law and marijuana law, and we're really looking at the area where those intersect. But again, you don't have to join right where we are. Our number again, 866-798-8255. You know, before we broke, I was asking you to ponder the person who went out to lunch and came back and put a vial of hemp oil on his desk. Unfortunately, perhaps for all to see. What can an employer do about that, or what should an employee be protected from? Who would like to grasp that?
I can take a stab at it. So, I think we've mentioned this, but if it is hemp oil, hemp is now legal, and it is no longer a Schedule I drug, thanks to the Farm Bill of 2018. And so, if it is hemp oil. I would say that the employer should not take action. And if we're in a union workplace, then certainly I feel comfortable that I would be able to defend that person if the employer did take any action. And we're talking about in California here, right?
We're talking California first.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit complicated because looking at hemp versus marijuana and the products they're from and the plants themselves, you cannot tell the difference. There is no visual difference, which, by the way, there's been some drama about that with respect to the TSA because of this change in the law. The TSA put something out on their website saying that it was now okay for folks to transport CBD oil if it was derived from a hemp plant. And the real problem with that is there's no way to tell. The TSA agents doing a visual aren't going to be able to tell. And they promptly ended up removing that from their website. But I think that this hypothetical is complicated because of the inability to tell whether it's hemp or CBD. And Jonathan might say, well, bringing that raises reasonable suspicion. Jonathan, do you want to?
Well, before you turn it to Jonathan, let me tweak the hypo just a little bit.
Okay.
There is the question of reasonable suspicion, and Jonathan, I want to leave that to you in just a moment, but I want to also, what about another instance? I picked up hemp oil or CBD oil for my pet, and it's by a brand called Pet Relief, leaf being spelled L-E-A-F, and it has a picture of a pot leaf on the front, but it also says that it's CBD oil or hemp oil containing CBD. Does that change your answer any? Or Jonathan, how do you feel about that? Do you think that employee is safe, or you think the employer might want to have a talking to with the person?
It would be a difficult conversation for the employer to have, I think, without that product being illegal. That would make it, difficult, and you would differentiate it from, whatever else you have on your desk, squeeze toys and all that. How is having that on your desk any different from these other things that you don't make any, you don't pay any attention to? So I think that would be something that they would just have to leave alone.
Same employee comes in wearing a jacket with a pot leaf on it. Lawful in California, it's certainly First Amendment, but what rights does the employer have? I mean, it's First Amendment protected activity, but on the other hand, what image do you want to portray to the public?
Well, one thing there, Jeff, we want to be careful about would be the First Amendment coming into play. And at a private employer, the First Amendment would not apply. There would be certain protections, as Danielle can tell you, under the National Labor Relations Act regarding protected concerted activity. But advocating for marijuana wouldn't necessarily be protected under the First Amendment at a private employer.
And of course, for those non-lawyers listening, when I use the term First Amendment loosely, but your constitutional rights tend to be between you and your government, with rare exception. And certainly First Amendment is not one of those exceptions. So you're not dealing with the government when you're talking about your job in most cases. Most people are privately employed, and your employer can tell you to quiet down at any given time, and it's not going to implicate the First Amendment.
However, I think that maybe this hypothetical changes if we are in one of the 15 states that protects workers from being discriminated against based on their identification as a user. Because does wearing that jacket identify them as a medical marijuana user, potentially? And I guess you would want, to know more. Did the employer, in fact, or is there proof that the employer took action because the hemp leaf caused them to think that the person was a user? And so in one of those states, I think that there could be action. There could be a successful lawsuit based on the state protective statutes, unless the employer had a policy that it applied evenly to everyone that said that you could wear no logo jackets, for example. In which case they could defend by saying that there was no discrimination because this policy applies to everyone.
So, in essence, to say no logos is safe. If they say no pot logos, you start having to get into more complicated analysis.
If you're in one of these 15 states that has this protective legislation, yes.
But California?
No.
You're not in one of those 15 states?
No.
So we talked a little bit about levels and how there's no level to show impairment. But that begs another question I had. Somebody tests positive for THC. They're not a pot smoker. They don't use any form of marijuana. Is there a limit on when and if an employer can terminate?
Under the current law in California, the answer to that is no. It would be that there's a zero tolerance for the metabolite to be in your system, and based on that case from 2008, the Ross versus Raging Wire case, where someone tested positive for marijuana that they were using medicinally, the employer or the court said that the employer had no reason to or no obligation to reasonably accommodate that use and could terminate them. under their drug policy.
You know, you're exactly where I wanted to end the hour. We've got about 5 minutes left, and I really wanted to turn the last 5 minutes or so to talk about medicinal use. We've all remember the old medical marijuana law that was in effect from the passage of Prop 215 up until 3 years ago when Prop 64 passed. But you talk about somebody who still to this day in this era of recreational use being lawful. You have somebody who comes in, they have a physician's recommendation and the whole nine yards. They can't be prosecuted. But are you saying that they could still lose their job?
Yes. I would say the only circumstances under which currently they would have a defense would be if they were in a union and had a collective bargaining agreement that gave them just cause, which almost all union workers have. And there could be an exception if you and your employer had a contract, and that could be in an employee handbook that you signed potentially, or if you had an individual employment contract in which the employer agreed not to drug test you and then ended up drug testing you. I think you could have a cause of action in those instances.
Yeah, there was a case a couple years ago against a big box retailer here in California where exactly that happened. And the employee identified themselves as a medical marijuana card user, and they were tested shortly after that. They tested positive, of course, and then the company terminated them. The employee sued, and again, consistent with the older decision, they said that they were not protected under the discrimination law in California, but they did allow a breach of contract claim to be made by the employee, because in that case, the employer's policy said that they would tolerate medical marijuana use as an exception to their drug policy. So it's the lesson learned there was for the employers to know what's in your handbook.
Now, you both brought up the case of Ross versus Raging Wire, and we did have that discussion on the air about 2 years ago when the three of us were on the air with Chuck Finney. One of the things that I thought was interesting when I read the Raging Wire case all those months ago is that Ross, the plaintiff in that case, actually was not somebody who was using marijuana medicinally for something that is more ethereal, to cure his alcoholism or to sleep at night or anything. I mean, he was actually disabled from back pain and actually was using medicinal marijuana to relieve his symptoms. Would that pose any relief for anybody today in California?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry,
yeah,
Jonathan.
The answer to that is still no. You know, as unfortunate as it sounds, the standard that you're getting at there would be a reasonable accommodation for a disability. And in many other instances, an employer has to go through a process of reasonable accommodation and figure out what can they do to allow the employee to do their job. But there are exceptions to those rules where there are safety implications. And in this case, the court didn't even go there. They just said because of the federal law prohibiting the marijuana use and as a Schedule I drug under federal law, that the employer did not have to, in essence, break federal law in order to accommodate the employee under California law.
Now, it might be different, and Jonathan, tell me if you agree with me, if there were facts pointing to the employer having done the termination based on the disability itself rather than the positive test, if there were any facts, if there was like an email in discovery that showed the real reason was the disability and not the positive, I think that there could be an action against the employer, even in California. Do you agree?
I think, yeah, that certainly you got your mixed motive there as a basis for termination, and that's something that California courts have recognized as something that an employee can take action on.
Well, we're just about out of time, and before we end the hour, I wanted to afford each of you to take a minute or minute and a half, no more than that, unfortunately, but take about a minute or thereabouts to any closing thoughts, any last anything you want to add. Jonathan, you want to go first?
Well, I'll be on the lookout for that legislation next year, and because we've got a new governor in place, so I think the motivation by the legislature to get that passed now will be stronger, and just to test what Governor Newsom does. So that would be something that I'm looking at, and it's been, you know, over 10 years since the Ross versus Raging Wire case came out, so I'm really surprised that nothing has been done, this being California, and all the legislation that we do see pass from every year.
It's amazing how slowly the wheels turn sometimes. Danielle, I'll take about a minute and a half, if you'd like to sum up.
You know, I agree with Jonathan. I'm really looking forward to seeing what this new legislation looks like, and I hope that the more that we talk about this issue, the more workers become aware that they can be terminated for this, the more we are organized and have the motivation and the money and the willpower to get this legislation passed and do go to California Normal and see what they have going on. If you want this legislation in place, I think it would give a lot of clarity to workers and to employers. And the final thing is IFPTE stands for International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers.
Local 20, right here in Oakland. Thank you so much. I'd like to thank both of you. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, in conjunction with the Labor and Employment Section of the California Lawyers Association, we've been talking about law and the workplace. 3 years after the passage of Proposition 64 in California, we now have a certain amount of marijuana legalization. But we've been having this discussion with my guest, Jonathan Judge, partner at the Cerritos, California firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rudd, and Romo. And Daniel Lucido, chief counsel for the Engineers and Scientists of California, IFPTE. Want to fill that in again?
International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers.
Local 20 in San Francisco. I'm sorry, in Oakland. Jonathan, Danielle, I'd like to thank you both for joining us on Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me.
Thank you. This has been fun.
And we will return next week with Your Legal Rights. Again, you've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. On behalf of production assistant Martin McLean and at the controls, Joanne Marr, I'm Jeff Hayden. Our thanks to you for listening, and have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.